Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to a cursed episode of Nintendo Voice Chat. This is episode 645. I am your host, Seth Macy. With me today is industry legend, Kat Bailey.
I don't know how we actually managed to start recording, but we're doing
I'm
it,
really
everybody.
I'm really confused.
We got this.
He wasn't even supposed to be here today, Per Schneider.
I am Jeff Vega today. The and evil general.
The hero.
Vega.
The hero that we need.
Yes. And holding a Kirby, I believe, it is Reb Valent.
I am here with Warm Kirby.
Warm Kirby.
Now, what makes Kirby so warm? New ace reporter on IGN.com.
Our new reporter who plugs in via USB and gets very warm. So you hug him and he's cozy.
That is, well, that's the, we're changing the topic of the show again.
The Warm Kirby.
Warm Kirby review, 10 out of 10.
There's nothing wrong with him at all.
Amazing. Actually, we're going to talk about Fire Emblem Engage. None of us have actually played Fire Emblem Engage. So there you go. But Brendan Graber did review it, gave it a 9 out of 10 on IGN.com. Go out, check that review. However, none of us have played it yet, but we all have thoughts and feelings. Per, I would like to start with you because you are a little bit of a Fire Emblem aficionado. I think that's fair to say. Are you looking forward, after reading the review, after reading the details, 9 out of 10 on IGN.com, are you looking forward to playing Fire Emblem Engage?
You don't even know how much. Like, when you were saying none of us have played it. It sounds like we're aloof about it. That's absolutely not true.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just because it hasn't come out yet.
That's right. We're not the reviewer of the game, so there weren't enough codes to go around for us to play it ahead of release, but I am going to buy it the moment it's live in the eShop. I am so excited to play it. And many different reasons. I think I talked about this on the show before. I accidentally discovered Fire Emblem when I lived in Japan. I just picked it up because it said Nintendo and the box art was cool, and I absolutely just got lost in this game and kind of couldn't believe how I never knew about this franchise before. And then I proceeded and played every game in the series since. And I watched trailers for this, I watched footage of this, I watched and read Brandon's review, and it feels like we're doing a little bit more of a classic Fire Emblem game, where some of the social elements that, you know, we liked in Three Houses got kind of like shrunk a little bit, which, you know, I'm ready for that. I really love the strategy gameplay. I love it when Fire Emblem is a little faster paced and doesn't take too long to tell its story. That's not to say that I didn't really like, I really like Three Houses and I loved all the social elements, but it's also these sort of, if every game was like that, I would get bored with it. And so I'm happy that there's this sort of variation. I don't want all my Zelda games to be the same either, and I couldn't be more excited for this one.
So you're saying Fire Emblem Three Houses is for babies?
No, I really like that. Oh. I think it's...
I'm just kidding.
It was such a fantastic game. I really, really liked it. But it's like Animal Crossing. If Animal Crossing came out every 2 years, I think I would be a bit bored unless something fundamentally changed, right? Because you understand the loop. And, you know, with this sort of the hub world in the Fire Emblem games getting bigger and bigger and taking up more of your time, and becoming more important to the development of your crew and the relationships, it does feel like if we went down that exact same route and it was again like, you know, a Fire Emblem Hogwarts or something, I'd be like, I feel like I've played this before. So I do love the duality. I do love the returning characters here. I'm obviously a big fan of Marth and Friends, and I hope it is as fast-paced and well-executed as a game like Mario & Rabbids, or, you know, our recent Marvel game that we got in the turn-based strategy genre.
Hmm. What was the... did Brendan mention how long it took him to beat it? I'm sure he did. I forgot.
You gotta how long to beat? Find out.
They're usually like 40 hour games, but yeah, how long to beat info isn't up yet because it has to be released first for us to display that. But yeah,
very cool. Kat, are you looking forward to Fire Emblem Engage?
I mean, yeah, I was a little bit on the fence for a while about it because it seemed to me to be a little bit of a gimmick, bringing back all of the original Fire Emblem characters. I put a lot of hours into Fire Emblem Heroes, and I really enjoyed it at the time, but I wasn't sure if I wanted something kind of in that vein, very fan service-y. But reading the reviews tells me that I think that it's a nice little change of pace from Fire Emblem Three Houses, especially on the battlefield. I love that they're bringing back the weapons triangle. Because
I missed that in the last one. Yeah.
As much as I loved Fire Emblem Three Houses, I thought the actual action on the battlefield got to be a little bit of a grind, especially in the back half of the game. It was much more strategic in the way that you built up your characters and leveled them up, figured out your class composition, and then you just kind of grinded through lots and lots of enemies until you got to the end. Whereas this one, they bring back the weapons triangle, and it's very intense because you can actually disarm opponents and they can disarm you, so you have to be a lot more, I think, intentional about triangle? How you place your characters.
I was gonna say, could you maybe a little brief overview of the weapons triangle for those of us who are not familiar?
It's like rock, paper, scissors. So basically,
oh hell yeah, I know that game.
There's a lance, there's an axe, there's a sword. Sword beats axe, axe beats lance, lance beats sword.
Yeah,
good old rock.
The spear has reached. Exactly. The axe cuts the spear in half. Like if you visualize it, it's similar to, you know, fire, water, elementary strengths in role playing games.
Yeah. And there's other aspects as well, like a bow can shoot down a Pegasus. Like, that was an aspect in Three Houses
as well. Just like
in
real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're flying, you're vulnerable to arrows. So it all makes sense, but what it creates in the game is this sort of tension, right? Like, if you screw up and you put your spear guy, you forget to move your spear guy out of the way of an axe attacker, you're fretting, right? Like, you're hoping that that's not the end for the character. And if you play Fire Emblem the way it should be played, with permadeath,
gatekeeping.
No, like, for me, that's, I've always really loved that way. And I've, you know, I have that's a shortcut to restarting the mission. I just love that sort of threat looming over you. And I, you know, it sucks when you're replaying a mission that's 2 hours long, but it's still fun. I love this kind of element of tension. Look how good the art looks.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the story as much, but Fire Emblem stories can be a little variable in their actual quality. Mm-hmm. It's kind of going back to where it was. I think Three Houses' strength was definitely its story. And for people, and I think Fire Emblem Three Houses, as a result, brought in a ton of new fans. And I think maybe those new fans are looking at Fire Emblem Engage and side-eyeing a little bit. But I'm also not, I don't have a problem with a series taking a different approach, trying, maybe going back to its roots a little bit, celebrating its history. I don't think this means that the Three Houses approach is dead forever. And I think that Fire Emblem Engage should be enjoyed on its own merits.
Okay. Reb, you got in trouble online for saying what you thought.
Never do that.
I was gonna say, are you willing to relive that? But
no, so I had a very mild take, I thought, which was that, hey, these reviews look great.
It's a mild take.
It looks like it's really fun for the hardcore tactics nerds. I think it's probably not for me, and that's okay. Like, I hope everybody who's into this has fun. That was my take. And a bunch of people decided to come be weird and accuse me of being a fake Fire Emblem fan. Which, look, I am a newer Fire Emblem fan. I've talked about this on the show. I played Shadows of Valencia and liked it fine. And then I got really, really into Three Houses. I put so much time into Three Houses. And I'm one of those people Kat was talking, like I said, I'd played Shadows of Valencia before, so it wasn't my first Fire Emblem, but it was like the one that...
And a pretty core Fire Emblem, but I might add.
Three Houses was the thing where I was like, oh, okay, now maybe I'm really into Fire Emblem. Like, maybe this is the series I'm super
This is
digging.
It.
Well, this is going back to Echoes Valencia. This one is kind of going back more towards that gameplay.
I like tactics games. Like, I'm still playing Mario Rabbit Sparks of Hope. I played Floppy Knights last year. Like, I like tactics games. I'm not a person who's anti-tactics games, but I like softer tactics games. I like tactics games that have, like, other things. So I really liked the character customization and building your little school elements. I liked all of the tea parties and the socialization and the romances and getting to spend time with the characters and watch the monastery evolve. Like, I really liked that on top of the tactics stuff. And, like, I think I would probably have a really good time with this. It sounds like it's really good. But the fact that it has a weaker story and the fact that it doesn't have as many of those elements means I'm, like,
You can go fishing, though.
Yeah, I'm less interested than I was. And so it's not me looking at this and thinking, oh, I would hate this. It's me looking at this and thinking, you know what? It's going to be... I don't remember how long either it was said to be. But yeah, like many hours long. And there's so many other games out there right now. I think I'm going to watch my partner play it and play something else. And that's, like, okay. I'm super stoked for the people who are excited for this.
Yeah, that is normal.
It's normal. That's normal behavior. It's fine. And I agree with what you two have said about it being good that the franchise gets to do two different things. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that there's two kinds of Zelda game. There's top-down, very dungeon puzzle-oriented, and then there's kind of this more open 3D adventure-y sort of thing. I love that those two things exist simultaneously. And I hope that after this, we get, you know, here in like 2, 3, 4 years, we get something that is more in the vein of Three Houses. And then I hope we get more things like this for the more like hardcore people. I hope we keep getting many different kinds of Fire Emblem for all the people who enjoy things, and especially for all the people who came in with Three Houses and like a softer Fire Emblem. I'm glad it all exists. Please enjoy. It looks really fun.
Yeah, I think the comparison to the Zelda franchise is apt, because, like, I would not miss a Link's Awakening reboot, but I also love the direction that Breath of the Wild has taken, right? And then I'll say that the difference between this Fire Emblem and Awakening or Three Houses is probably not as big as the difference between Breath of the Wild and Link's Awakening, right? They're much closer together. From what I've seen, I've seen this game played in the office before it came out. The UI is awesome. And this is something about Nintendo and some of its partners like Jupiter, who were making the Picross games. Like, they really think about the control UI and the menu systems ad infinitum. They just kind of they tweak them until it feels right. And every time I've played like an Advance Wars or a Fire Emblem clone, and I'd move the unit, I'm like, oh no, why do they make you go to the bottom to finish the move? Or like they would like hide an option that you would use all the time and make it kind of harder to select, or they won't automatically show you the range of the character, or some stupid thing like that. And then you go back to Fire Emblem, you're like, ah, thank you. You know, it's just, and this one seems like it's even better.
Can I just talk about the graphics for a hot second?
Yes, like, please.
After all the discourse about how Nintendo Switch is totally washed, the graphics are absolutely garbage, we have what seems like a very lovely looking game. Every time I watch the battle sequences, the story sequences, I'm like, this game looks great.
Yeah.
And it just shows to me what really strong art direction can mean for a game on Nintendo Switch. No, it's not nearly technically ambitious as a Pokemon game.
Sure.
It's not an open world game. It's a top-down tactics game. So they're going to have an easier time of it. But honestly, I think the art direction just in general is so much better than either of the Pokemon games that came out last year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real pretty.
I think I agree with you 100%.
God, I just want to nice. Play it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful anime boys and girls showing their navels. And want to see
it's
that.
It's very important in battle. Very important
it
in
is
battle.
Extremely I know. Important.
It's important to be very hot while you're fighting.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put this to the audience, what the over-under is on me playing this more than 3 hours and deciding it's not for me.
Did you play Three Houses?
I played Three Houses, and it wasn't for me.
How are you on
however,
like rabbits what, or
what about I'm not, a, was not for
I've
you?
Said it a million times. I'm not a strategy RPG guy necessarily, but I think it was the social stuff in Three Houses that I okay. didn't like as much.
Because, oh, interesting.
Valkyria Chronicles 4, I loved like just battling in that game. Like,
yeah.
I really interesting. Enjoyed that. So.
And to those who are, you know, like if you're on the fence and you're asking, is this game for you? Because that's a really valid question. Like a review is never going to be able to 100% tell you whether the game is right for you. It's just the experience of the reviewer, and Brendan really yes. loved it, right? But it's like, I would approach it with like, if you've tried a game like a Tactics Ogre or even, you know, any of the isometric turn-based strategy RPGs, they're a little bit more fussy. They require you to kind of determine which direction you face at the end of the turn, right? Because they have systems where if you get attacked from the back, it causes more damage. And like Fire Emblem and Advance Wars are a little different in that their abilities, the character's abilities matter. And, you know, in Fire Emblem, you can upgrade them and change them as well. But it's like, it's not as fussy about the little details of like which way you face and all of that stuff. So, I think, you know, if this is your first game, give it a try, like in that genre. I think this might be the right one.
Yeah, I think it's also true. I mean, you can kind of do what I'm doing if you're on the fence. Like, if you don't have a whole lot else to play right now and are just curious, like, give it a try. See if it's for you. Mm-hmm. But if you have 20 other things that you're really excited to play and you're not really sure about this one, it's okay to go play those other things and maybe come back to this later if you really feel strongly about
what
it.
What else
like,
is coming out right now?
And it's not like Xenoblade where you start playing and there's 1,000 game systems and you're like, which button does what? Again, it's like it slowly builds and it kind of eases you into the gameplay.
Yeah. No, there's not a million games coming out right now, but I have a backlog like a million miles long. There's a bunch of like little indies and stuff that have come out recently that I've been poking my head into.
I think the interesting thing about Intelligent Systems is that even though they have this reputation for being kind of hardcore, especially the Fire Emblem series from back in the day, I've always found that they're surprisingly accessible, and they've only gotten more accessible since Fire Emblem Awakening came out, because it's very straightforward, I think, in the way that it handles its tactics and its positioning of its characters. It's unforgiving. Mm-hmm. But it's very easy to understand for the most part.
But you can
part.
Tweak it, right? Like the later games and the early Fire Emblems weren't like that. The later games let you rewind time. So you've got this ability to undo a stupid move. And by the way, we've all done them in Fire Emblem games where like you move a unit, you're like, oh no, I meant to go the other way. And like, and then you're
finger
screwed.
Slips.
And so honestly, having those crutches is really nice
the
sometimes.
The cat headbutts your controller.
I think that's what turns me off with strategy RPGs is when I make a wrong move, I am devastated and I can't get over it, and I just don't want to play anymore. I'm like, well, I screwed that battle up, and now I'm going to get a bad score, and I'm going to lose a person, and I just don't want to play as I demand perfection.
We made a joke about gatekeeping earlier, but like what they really did with Fire Emblem is like they let somebody who's a purist and has played Fire Emblem forever, they let them continue to play the games like that, but they added all these different options so that you can tailor it to your experience. And it's like, if you don't want your characters to be dead because you made a stupid move, at the end of the round, they can be revived and you know, you don't have those repercussions, and you can take back certain moves too.
Yeah, and it's stuff like that that I think helped me get into the series on the whole, just because it was no longer this scary, daunting thing. Yeah. And that certainly helped in Three Houses. And yeah, I might circle back to this later. Like I said, I'm not remotely put off by it. I think it looks great.
I read an op-ed that said you hated it.
Right, yeah. I read a bunch of people on Twitter who said that I clearly should never play tactics games and should only play visual novels. So, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a Fire Emblem fan? Name Three Houses.
The permadeath discourse, I think, from Fire Emblem is well in its past at this point.
Yeah.
It's almost a holdover at this point. I mean, it's kind of like hardcore mode in a lot of other games, where it's like you can pick it if you want, but most people are going to probably pick casual.
It was the sister topic to, you know, should Soulsborns be easier or has adjustable difficulty levels? Maybe the brother topic.
Well, mostly. The important thing on discussions like that online is that nobody wins. In fact, we all lose
that's right.
Part of our humanity by participating in them. So, that's Fire Emblem Engage. If you're wondering what Pear's going to be doing this weekend, wonder no more. He's going to post a picture on Instagram of some beer that you've never heard of.
Ooh.
And his Switch with Fire Emblem.
Yep.
And it's going to say weekend, and that's going to be it.
I got to find a beer that's blue and red in one.
That's blue toothpaste, red. Pear. That is you're toothpaste. For toothpaste.
I guess Pepsi.
There you go, cold Pepsi. Beer. Perfect. It's the perfect partner for Fire Emblem Engage. Hey, who's that guy?
Oh,
it's
my God.
Jeffrey Vega from the internet. I didn't know that he was going to be showing up here. What's up, Jeffrey? I think his mic is messed up. He's very excited. Yeah, Jeffrey, by the way, has been to Super Nintendo World, and he was so blown away by it that he was unable to speak. He has not been able to speak.
Well, I think the fact that he's using an N64 expansion pack as a mic might have something to do with that, too.
Well, his original mic didn't have enough RAM.
Yeah.
So that's why he has that.
He needs to get that mm-hmm. Hey You Pikachu microphone, the one that's so low quality that Pikachu can't actually understand you.
We were supposed to ask Jeffrey about Super Nintendo World this week, but various factors complicated that.
Yeah. So pardon our technical difficulties, but Jeff Vega will return.
You can check out our speed run of Super Nintendo World over on IGN.com.
Sure, I was supremely jealous, by the way. Yeah. I would like to be there instead of here right now, too.
Pear.
I mean, no offense to all of you. But
when are we doing our live stream?
You can orchestrate this.
When
Send
are we doing
all.
Our live show? You control the budget, Pear.
No, I don't have a budget
yet. The power.
I need the budget first. Oh, 2023 headwinds.
Travel and entertainment.
Year.
Let's go. We don't need to do Gamescom. I'm just saying.
Let's rent bicycles.
Fly to LA on the E3 budget
expensive.
And then just not do E3 and go to Nintendo World.
That sounds good.
Sticking my thumb out.
It's a good plan.
I'm going to hitchhike across America. That will be an adventure in and of itself. Just to get to Super Nintendo World.
Seth's travelogue. It would be like The Wizard, getting to...
Oh my God! No, California! Yes!
He even goes to Universal Studios in that movie.
I was more thinking National Lampoon's. He does look a little bit like a young Chevy Chase, too, now that I think about it.
He does, doesn't
yeah?
he?
Yeah.
I'm much nicer.
Oh, okay.
That's true.
Well, the character is... Mr. Griswold, let's say that.
Yes. Whose first name escapes me, even though it's Clark.
Clark
Seth.
Griswold.
Right. Seth Mason Griswold.
You were talking about budgets a second ago, and that's the perfect segue to talk about earnings.
Wow.
No, it isn't, but yes.
NPD.
Because they're both
it's
about
NPD.
Money. NPDs, okay. Excuse me. NPDs, which is the National Parmesan District.
I wish.
Can you imagine a whole district of the United States dedicated to Parmesan cheese?
Yes.
Yum.
No.
Just shredded or in blocks, however you like it. But that's actually not what it stands for. I don't remember, but it doesn't matter. They put out their monthly list of the top-selling games, which, side note, isn't 100% accurate because not everyone reports the same way. Like, Nintendo doesn't report its digital sales, so when you see a Nintendo game on there, it's only physical version. But anyway.
It's the closest
Nintendo
we got.
Out.
It's yeah, the closest anything. We
it's
got
the
to
best we got.
What was sold in stores.
Yes, and so Nintendo... did some things. Surprisingly to no one, Mario Kart 8 still continues to do well. But Reb you actually wrote an analysis of this, so you can speak to this with an expert voice, whereas I am just talking out of my shoe.
Yeah, so the list we have up right now, if you're watching this on video, is the December top 10 selling things. And I didn't talk about that too much because it's pretty straightforward, right? Like no one is shocked to see Pokemon Scarlet and Violet selling bonkers amounts of copies. Like, we just know this.
That's just Nintendo.
Pokemon Scarlet and Violet being at the top of the Switch charts is no shocker. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 selling the most overall platforms in December shocks no one. The thing that I found kind of interesting that I ended up talking about in an article on IGN was what was going on with Mario Rabbids Sparks of Hope. So Ubisoft had this kind of like emergency conference call like a week ago where they freaked out and canceled a bunch of games that we've never heard of before. And then they delayed Skull and Bones for like the sixth time. But then they also said in there that Mario Rabbids Sparks of Hope underperformed. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the situation where they were acting like they were going to let that and Just Dance 23 carry their year for them. But I was looking into the NPD. And so to be clear, NPD is only US sales and it's dollar sales. And because Sparks of Hope is on Nintendo platforms, we don't have digital sales. So, and also these are rankings. Like, we don't actually get a unit sales number for how many units it sold. So it's all like very relative and fuzzy. But I was looking into it and Sparks of Hope seems like it did fine. Like, it came out in, it came out in October and it debuted at number 6 and then held on at number 13 and number 14 in November and December, which I think is fine for like a Nintendo Switch exclusive that is not like a Call of Duty and is in competition with like Call of Duty, Elden Ring, and a bunch of sports titles. Like,
and Pokemon.
Yeah. And Pokemon. I mean, that seems fine.
But the context being, I think Ubisoft had such high hopes because they don't have an Assassin's Creed, right? They don't have their sort of AAA game that really brings in the money and gets investors excited and all of that. And I think they were hoping this would be it because there was nothing else from Nintendo, like no Mario game, no Zelda game this holiday season.
Right. Just because it has Mario in it?
Yeah, I think they had high aspirations. Or maybe they're measuring it by...
But Kingdom Battle, like, see, again, we don't have comparison numbers, so it's not possible to actually one-to-one compare it with Kingdom Battle. But I was looking up how Kingdom Battle did in the NPD. And Kingdom Battle, so it's a little awkward because it came out at the end of August, but the days that it was out in August were not counted for the month of August for NPD. So it doesn't appear until September, which is an NPD thing. But it debuted at number 5, so it was a little higher than Sparks of Hope's debut in September. And then it just completely vanishes from the top 20 in October, November, and December. Yeah. So it didn't even beat like anything else that was selling during that time period. And granted, 2017 was pretty stiff competition. I mean, that year has Breath of the Wild and Odyssey. Yeah. But even though 2017 had a bunch of really big games, it didn't have, I think, the sheer number of enormous big games that we have going on right now. And so, like, it's very weird. Like, it makes me wonder what was Ubisoft expecting for Sparks of Hope? Like,
I think hoping more than expecting, right? Like, this is Ubisoft, and I actually really like a lot of Ubisoft's games. I'm a big Assassin's Creed fan, and I love it when they experiment with stuff like Mario and Rabbids. And, like, from a Ubisoft, like Activision, were really good at annualizing franchises, like having this sort of steady stream of big AAA games. And then they obviously hit some challenges on the development side, or maybe things were just kind of ballooning out of control. Like, when you look at the credits of an Assassin's Creed game, it's the entire country plus a couple other countries mixed in, right? It's just getting insane. And I think, honestly, I think the pandemic delayed a bunch of stuff, and we're feeling the effects now. And they're kind of off their game, and like, they don't have their usually kind of fun experiments either. You know, it's and it used to be that Just Dance was just this money making machine that they would put on every platform. They would still publish it on the last Nintendo platform, like the Wii or Wii U, and it would still make a lot of money. And like, I think a couple of things are broken now. You know, things change. So I hear you. It's like it definitely, like, to say Ubisoft is in trouble because Mario and Rabbids didn't perform, I think that's nonsense too.
No, I agree.
I think they had higher expectations. They thought everybody loved the last game, so more people are going to buy this one, and maybe that didn't happen.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously, hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
This year, I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN, it's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Maybe they spun a narrative for themselves that, mm-hmm. Hey, Mario's in this one. We've got a big marketing budget. It's going to be front and center.
Yep.
And Nintendo's lineup, it's in a prime position. It's only really going against Pokemon. Xbox literally has nothing.
Yeah.
Switch has a huge install base. Surely we can do better than we did last time.
I think they thought they would be the Mario game of the season. And then, like, I don't know how much they spent on marketing. It wasn't ubiquitous. Like, I didn't see a lot about it.
I was going to bring that up.
I feel like I'm like one of the only people talking about that game. I really loved it and finished it. But it was kind of quiet around it being a Mario game.
Yeah.
I did notice after Laurent did talk, made those comments about the sales performance, like in the eShop, magically both Just Dance and Mario & Rabbids went top in the featured category. So
funny.
I think Nintendo went, let's get them some more sales. Let's put it up there.
So aside from the fact that the Rabbids, I think, are actually a drag on this game.
Oh,
I really do.
Uh-huh.
I love them.
I think that it's a tactics series, which is niche anyway. Mm-hmm. And so you need something that really pushes it. And Three Houses, which was very successful, but also not like a huge seller. It was successful by Fire Emblem standards. Let's be honest, had the memeing. It had all of the people who are like kissing and the thirsty characters. Mm-hmm. You don't have that Mario plus Rabbids in Sparks of Hope.
I mean, you didn't have the same level of memeing, but you had the memeing in Kingdom Battle, right? Because everyone was surprised by Rabbid Peach and all those kinds of things. Yeah, it's
kind of old news, though.
I've been trying to sort of articulate, because I've been playing Sparks of Hope. I've actually annoyingly been kind of stymied in the final world because I keep having bugs. Like, I didn't read reviews that this was a buggy game, so I don't know what's going on, but I now had 3 levels just, like, bug out on me in a way that is making it very difficult to complete. So I'm trying to finish it, but it's not working very well. But, like, the thing I've been trying to articulate about it is Kingdom Battle felt very surprising. Mm. Like, people, I think, were not expecting it to be good, And then over time, the word got around that, hey, actually, this is really good. Yeah. And so everybody bought in. Yeah. I think Sparks of Hope is good. I don't think it's a bad game, but it doesn't have that same like surprise factor. There's not a conversation around it being, hey, this is actually really, really freaking good.
Yeah. I think there was a little bit of chatter saying, actually, the rabbits are fun, right? Like there was, the rabbits, they're not... I'm with you. If the rabbits were gone from this game, it'd be fine. There's enough people in the Mario Kingdom to make this fun. But it's like, I thought they were actually really enjoyable. And like, you know, this sort of the rabbits fandom for the Mario core characters is kind of charming too.
I don't like that they talk though.
I want to say.
that was weird, right?
Yeah. Like part of the original marketing that could not have been planned or paid for was when Shigeru Miyamoto made the developer cry.
That's like,
and that was such a sweet and like just amazing, pure, honest moment that kind of just took everybody. Like it was so heartwarming, and that I think might have helped sort of keep this game, the original game, in people's minds. Not so much, there was nothing like that for this one. So, and of course you couldn't pay to recreate that sort of thing. It would look very weird and awkward.
What's funny is this one is much more like Paper Mario. You know, like the sort of the overworld has more hooks in it, and the battles are more like, you know, the battles are like a variant of the sort of battles you would get in Paper Mario, where you have some interaction. It's still turn-based in a way, but like you get to do more, and so it's more interesting than a typical menu-driven battle from yesterday's JRPGs. But like I thought the overworld, now visually I think it struggled a bit. It didn't run smoothly and it had some challenges. Yes. And I don't think, you know, I think it could have used a little bit more time and refinement there. But I thought the overworld was really interesting. And there were so many fun little things to discover.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm sort of afraid of is that so Ubisoft has so few weird franchises like this now. Like they've kind of nixed all of them slowly over the years. And this worked because Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle was such a hit for them. And I thought Sparks of Hope would be successful enough that they would say, yeah, this is worth continuing to do. This partnership is worth continuing to foster. Yeah. But I'm worried that now they've created this narrative where, oh, this wasn't good enough. And so I'm very afraid that we're going to come up, you know, 5 years down the road and we're going to be wondering, hey, I wonder if there's going to be a new Mario Rabbids, and they're not going to do it again. They're going to just cling to Assassin's Creed and all of that because the narrative is going to be, well, it didn't do well enough for us.
Yeah. Ubisoft needs a fresh start in general. Like even the stuff that you would think would be safe, like Rainbow Six, has really not panned out for them at all.
Prince of Persia remake. What a disaster, right? Ooh. Like we were supposed to get one and it looked really bad.
These games aren't coming out and... Wow, you look back on 2022, like their just release slate was totally barren, and they're not like EA where they can fall back on a FIFA.
Yeah.
They're not like Activision Blizzard where they've got Call of Duty bringing in the money. So it's like, what do? All their attempts to make those kinds of service games have kind of fallen flat.
They have some of the older ones were really good. One of the Division, I don't play these.
Division 2 maybe.
One of the Divisions like carried them for so freaking long.
Oh yeah.
And Assassin's Creed Odyssey I think did really well for them for a very long time. But it's dwindling. They haven't had anything to replace it.
Rainbow Six is a great game and a long running game. Mm-hmm. And like when they succeed well. I think one of Ubisoft's challenges is this sort of, we want that too syndrome, right? Like there's a Destiny, we want a Destiny 2. There's a Fortnite, we want a Fortnite 2, right? And so they do kind of spread themselves thin. I did like the announcements for what's happening with Assassin's Creed.
Mirage.
Assassin's Creed Mirage sounds good. Going back to the Middle East, Hexe. If that's medieval Germany, I'm going to pee myself. Not here. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff happening, not on Switch.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I hope they don't get discouraged by this. At the very least, maybe reuse that engine for a Zelda Tactics game, then we're good.
Hey, there you go. Mm-hmm. Well, I, for one, am looking forward to playing Skull and Bones at E3 again, because I played it at E3 2018, which was the one and only time I've been to E3. So yep.
I would play Zelda Tactics if it's just Zelda Tactics. Mm. Don't put any rabbits in
it. It's not Zelda and the rabbits.
I don't think the rabbits would fit there. I agree with you.
Yeah, have you seen some of the concept for Breath of the Wild? They got weird in that stuff.
It's true, they did.
I want Child of Light back. Remember Child of Light?
That was cool. That was back when they did.
And that was on the Switch, if I remember right.
Yeah.
By the way, it was Ghost Recon, not Rainbow Six, that I was thinking.
Yeah.
That one was kind of a flaw.
And we talked about Rayman not that long ago, too.
Ghost Recon. And Far Cry I never finished either. So I do, like, I to say a finished Assassin's Creed game is an understatement.
Thought all about Far Cry mm-hmm. 6 that even came out. Boy, last year.
Those games got stale. I have an entire rant about Ubisoft as a non-fan, but I'll save it for another time.
But also, to be fair, like I feel like we've seen the Ubisoftification of open world games. Like even Breath of the Wild does Ubisoft elements towers, of like climbing the tower and stuff. And like, yeah, that was really novel and unique and very Ubisoft. And now it's everybody. Like, you know, Horizon feels like a Ubisoft game.
But other games do it better.
Ghost of Tsushima, that's the issue. Now we get to visit, you know, Japan and the robot future with Ubisoft's kind of setup.
You think about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and this is getting off track, but I mean, they just wanted to be The Witcher at a certain point.
It was exactly like
The Witcher. But only huge and bloated.
It's too much, yeah.
Yeah.
But I just realized as I was going through these, Ubisoft has a lot of slam dunks on Nintendo platforms specifically. Like, Just Dance, like you were saying, Pear, has historically been huge on Nintendo platforms.
Rayman Legends.
Rayman, Child of Light, Mario Rabbids. Like, every time they do something a little weird or off the beat of those big open world tower shooty games, like, and they put it on a Nintendo platform, it does really well. So it's... Yeah, I don't want them to give that up. I'm very afraid. I'm clinging to it.
That's the
Sparks
part
of Hope is good.
That's the part I love about Ubisoft. Like at Wii launch, you know, they had a game that used the Wiimote as guns, the way that it was advertised in Nintendo commercials. Like, you know, with they experimented with some crazy stuff on pretty much every Nintendo platform. When you go back, there's
was
like
Red
a,
Steel. A
yeah, Red
game?
Steel is the gun game. I'm thinking of, but they did something really unique for Wii U too.
What was the game
pendulum?
I think you were on a bike.
You're thinking Trials.
Trials, which they bought.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Trials is good. Awesome.
Yeah,
I love those Trials games.
That was really fun.
That was an acquisition. I love those games too.
Yeah, but super fun.
But yeah, I want them to keep experimenting on these platforms. God, I don't think there's
so
any
hard
game I've ever been madder at than Trials.
Oh, I know.
That was really fun.
Oh, so good. If you haven't played Trials, go check
it
out.
A lot of very dumb fun Switch with that game.
Well, let's take a journey.
We just watched a guy get hit by a train. In the game.
Yes, not in real life. Let's take a journey to the Miiverse. This is the segment of the show where we talk about what's going on in our real lives, video games or things that we want to talk about. Reb, you had something you've specifically wanted to call out for the Miiverse this week. Do you mind, please?
I did. So there is a rumor going around that I have absolutely no information on, cannot confirm or back up in any way. It's just gotten people talking, which is why I want to bring it up, that Baten Kaitos is coming back. Folks, let's bring Baten Kaitos back. That game slapped. It was so good.
There are thousands of people, Reb, right now saying, what the heck?
Literally tens of people
game.
Are like, yeah, Rev, let's go.
Yeah.
There's some card RPG fans going,
they are stoked
right now.
Eternal Wings and the Lost Ocean is this bizarre GameCube game that takes place on these sky islands. And you play as you play as the guardian spirit of this guy named Kallus, who's kind of a jerkwad. and he's got this like revenge mission that he's on, but it ends up intersecting with this woman who's got a big save the world quest. There are elements of this game that are very not good, like the voice acting.
I
think people
I love bad voice acting
it's
in video games.
It's pretty
actually.
There's a couple voice actors in there who are really good, and then everything else is just atrocious. Anytime a child speaks, I want to remove my ears and just pop them off my head like a Mr. Potato Head.
You haven't had children yet because I want to remove my ears when my kids talk too.
But the plot is kind of there's moments in the plot that are really good, and then the ending is like very cheesy. It has what I think is one of the best twists in video games at the midpoint, which I will not spoil for people because if they do remake it, I want people to experience it because it's so cool. But if you know, you know. It has an incredible soundtrack, Motoi Sakuraba of Dark Souls, Golden Sun, many, many other things fame. Absolutely
Valkyrie
banger
Profile.
Soundtrack. Yes, banger soundtrack from that guy. And it has this card battling system that is really, like, there's problems with it. Like, you can pick it apart and critique it, but it's really cool the ways in which, like, the cards interact. You use them in battle, but they also have interactions with the like with the real world. So you can like if you have you can get a Magnus of green bananas in your inventory, and when they're green bananas, you can't eat them, but you can throw them and do like a small amount of damage. But then if you play for long enough and have them in your inventory for long enough, they will ripen and then they're yellow bananas and then they will heal you. But then if you let them sit for even longer, then they become brown, rotten bananas and then they do poison damage. So it's stuff like that. Like it's this really cool like time-based system that there's like some that change depending on what other Magnus you have in your inventory or if you use them on the same turn as other Magnus. And it's just very cool and unique. And I think this is a really interesting RPG that should it get a remake, they could polish up some of the weaker spots. Like they could tidy up the battle system. They could bring in some different voice actors. They could maybe polish up the writing a little bit to make the plot flow a bit more smoothly. And it's just, it's such this, it's this weird game. It's Monolith Soft also. And it was published by,
I was going to ask who.
And so
who
like,
yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles guys.
It's folks that are still around and they've said in the past, I think at some point they were interested in doing it like a DS or a 3DS. There is a prequel that's also
there's
on the
Origins release, I think only in Japan. But it's
no, there's a prequel. It came out here.
Oh, it came out here
and
too.
And the prequel is also very good. And
I never played that one.
It fixed a lot of the problems with the first game. Not all of them, but some of them.
It's good. We launched columns on IGN today. Check out, Reb already has one called, what was it, Hidden Treasures.
Yeah.
About indie games. I'm writing a column, I think it'll go up next week, called Lost Gems, which is about games that are forgotten and that, you know, deserve to come back into the spotlight. And I'll kick it off with Live Alive just as an example of something that came back. Nostalgia is bringing back all these forgotten gems. I might not have anything to write about if this continues, because this game totally would have been on the list. Like, I haven't heard anybody say the name of this game since it came out.
Oh, I
honestly
loved it. I played it so many times.
but it was very notable. I remember when it came out on GameCube, it was a time where Nintendo games were kind of lacking that sort of storytelling, polish, rendered cutscenes, voice acting, all that sort of stuff, orchestrated music that the competition was doing. And then out comes this game on GameCube, and it was like super polished and had all this,
beautiful,
all the bells and whistles.
Backdrops.
They didn't, publish it, obviously, but.
It was a JRPG on the GameCube, which is a pretty rare beast at the time outside of like Tales of Symphonia. But I would love it if Monolith Soft went back to the concept of Bat and Kaitos and just made a new one.
Yeah, and I'd be cool with that too.
I think that the foundation and the nuts and bolts of it can be really successful in this day and age because, I mean, anime characters and a card-based battle system. If you refine and expand on that, I think that could be a very modern and cool concept. And I think Monolith Soft has a lot of leash to be able to kind of do whatever they want now because they're a huge part of Nintendo's tech base and Nintendo really relies on them. And also Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was very successful, very well received. So I have to imagine that if they said, hey, can we do a new Bat and Kaitos that fully expands on the concept from the original GameCube? Nintendo would probably be like, have at it.
Yeah. Maybe port these as like a collection just so people can play the originals again.
That'd be nice.
Yeah,
I will say putting a business hat on, that's much more risky than, you know, bringing kind of using what you've already released that nobody's played. I don't think this game sold well at all, right?
Like, I don't think it sold like, I don't remember. I don't think it sold like atrociously in the sense that they're like, oh, people didn't like this because they got a green light on a prequel. I mean, it was an RPG on the GameCube, so I can't imagine it was.
I'd be interested to see what a remaster looked like.
Yeah.
I think it might be a little too dated at this point.
Might be,
but so that's why I would be stumping for a sequel, but
I hear you. It's super risky for something that none of us.
You can go to the IGN store and get the Per Schneider business hat in the apparel section.
Oh yeah, is there one? That's
starting next week. Yep.
This game has an emotionally conflicted young man with long red hair who attacks people with a trumpet. It's great.
Okay. I'm into that.
As one
does.
Well,
you should have led with that, Reb.
As one does.
You bury the lead
on
that.
When I was a child.
And has whales that you're not allowed to call whales, just like Avatar.
Big fan of cetaceans. Reb, real quick, what was the song that people should go look out and find and just dance to?
I mean, listen to the whole soundtrack, but I was playing for Seth earlier today, the boss battle theme, Chaotic Dance,
Chaotically.
again, if you know, you know. If you don't, it's a great boss battle theme and very unexpected. It's very what Sakuraba usually does.
Yeah, it's very good. Real quick, because we are doing a shorter show this week. I'm sorry, fans. I wanted to bring up that I started playing Chained Echoes, and I love it a lot. So if you have Xbox Game Pass, it's free, or you can just buy it on Switch or PC or PlayStation 5, or buy it on Xbox if you don't have Game Pass. But if you like colorful JRPG, I won't say likes, but homages. Yeah, look at it. It's so pretty.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
It's just amazing. And I'm actually really enjoying
That's
it a lot.
Cool.
I have it on Steam.
You would
deck.
Love it. You should play it immediately.
Yes.
Eric Van Allen was telling me I should play it, but
it's like Final Fantasy.
So I didn't know what it was.
Big Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger energy.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then it even has like when you get into a battle, it almost feels like Secret of Mana a little bit for like a half a second
because
the enemies, their like eyes will sometimes bulge out when they see you, and then they'll get into the battle formation, and it's turn based, which is what I require of all my RPGs.
Terrific battle system too.
Yeah. Smart. Super good battle system.
It's a little Xenogears-y and... with the mechs.
Yes, but
that's
what actually got me.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that!
You got my attention.
It's got everything you want, and I think this was developed by one guy, Matthias Linde, I believe is the name of the developer. But yeah, super good game. Go check it out. Highly, highly recommend. But now we have to hit the question block because we're rapidly running out of time. So do. That's the speed up sound.
Yeah.
Did you know that's if you speed that up 5 times, that's the sound of Mario growing when he gets a mushroom.
Oh, in my family, we call that Totoro, Totoro, Totoro.
Oh.
Yeah, like when did it Totoro yet? No, it hasn't Totoroed yet, so you still have time to finish the level. Yeah.
Wow, we just learned about the Schneider House rules.
That's
for
right.
Super
the Schneider House rules.
Cool.
Great movie. Yeah, one person got that. Thank you.
Me and Floor Guy.
Okay.
Floor guy
is Seth Macy this week. Floor
this
Guy.
Week. It's me, Floor Guy. Okay. Real quick, several people asked, when are we getting new Super NES or N64 games? And the fake answer is they will all release immediately after we get done recording.
No, of course.
The answer is none of us know.
We don't know.
We can't answer these questions. We don't know these things. So I'm not saying not to ask questions, but we don't have the insider knowledge. Pear might, but the rest of us.
Whenever Nintendo wants.
No,
exactly.
It's so strange. It's a subscription program. So, you would figure they would have some nugget every month that gets you back into it where you go, I feel good about being subscribed. But then literally we talked about how getting 3 Jalico games doesn't count, but I would take a Jalico game announcement over nothing.
I would take Bases Loaded. That was a very good baseball game.
Yeah, always Jalico. Tough when you have something with sports licenses to bring that back.
Doesn't have any licenses.
Oh, that's fake. Right.
It's famous, the fake names that they have for the players. It's one of those famous memes because they just didn't know. Johnny America.
You could just play baseball, the original baseball.
Something's up. I bet we'll get GoldenEye soon. They announced a bunch of N64 games that they haven't put out yet.
Yeah, they've been slow. I mean, they Pokemon Puzzle League on there, and I'm happy. I'm going to play Devil's Advocate for a moment. I'm not going to pretend that this is a good value by any stretch of the imagination, but as somebody who has the disposable income to be able to afford all of this, I love having these old games on my Switch, and I play them all the time. Mm. Actually, I would say the Super Nintendo and maybe the N64 app are two of my most played games every single year.
Dang.
Yep. On the Nintendo Switch.
That's
and
really cool.
That's just me. Yep. I like old games now at this point, so I spend a lot of time playing Super Mario All-Stars, which is also on this thing. And there's a lot of obscure games, like Panel de Pon.
Yeah.
Puyo Puyo, I already mentioned Pokemon Puzzle League. I think Paper Mario's on there, so you can play that.
Super Mario RPG is not yet.
No, but you're right. There's great stuff on there, but we're used to subscribing, being fed by the companies that we subscribe to, right?
If you
turned on Netflix and it was always the same thing, you'd be like, do I need this month? And I do feel not to be ungrateful, we got new Mario Kart levels as part of the subscription, but they asked us to pay more for a higher tier of games that include Genesis and N64, and I don't feel fed.
You're totally right.
Yeah. There's a whole section on Xbox whenever I open up my Xbox that says new on Xbox Game Pass. Here's all the things that are coming this month. Here's all the things that are coming next month.
We have a column about it because it's such a meaty topic.
Right. This thing that I'm paying for is giving me new things to keep me here, but Nintendo has nothing really like that.
I would never say that this is a good value for sure. I think that Nintendo really needs to sit down and think about how they can make people want to be part of the subscription platform, because what they're doing, it's not it. Having said that, if you show the Nintendo Switch to 12-year-old Kat and said, you can play all the Nintendo and SNES and N64 and Sega Genesis games, plus all of this amazing other cool stuff, I'd be like, this is the most incredible platform I have ever seen. So.
It's also just so easy to set and forget. Like, I have a friend who has an 8-person family plan for a group chat, and I Venmo him $10 a year to maintain the subscription, and that's the end of the discussion. Like, I don't even think about it. He just invoices me for $10 once a year. Whatever.
Well, I'm just going to recommend that Pear loan Nintendo your business hat so that they can make better decisions when it comes to their online service subscription. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for NVC this week. I am so sorry. But before we go, I have a few favors to ask. If you're watching us on YouTube, leave us a like and a nice comment. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, please leave us a review. It helps us spread the good NVC word. And if you didn't know, I have a new monitor that's over here now, so that's why I have to look. Special thanks to Pear for coming in at the last second. Also Red on the ones and twos for bringing all the joy and the clips that we have. And remember, most of all, thanks to you for hanging out with us, because NVC is the only place. Hey, there's Jeffrey Vega!
It's him.
Is the only place where Jeffrey Vega can
get the thing.
There he is. He made it after all.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Jeffrey Vega. I'm spinning.
Is he really here? I thought that was him.
Hi, guys. TikTok, TikTok.
Oh, he says that all the time. Yep. Holy cow.
TikTok me, Jeffrey Vega.
Jeffrey Vega and the N64 expansion pack. Once again, very cool that they got to meet after the holiday special.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.